So do you remember your reaction to the O.J. Simpson verdict, his acquittal? What do you remember about how that trial was run and about how it was reported and the effects that it has had on our society? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, October 3rd. We will talk with a guest about the lasting effects of that trial on American culture, including the judiciary system and cameras in the courtroom. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Jerrianne Hazlett. She was the Los Angeles Superior Court's media liaison and public information officer during the O.J. Simpson trial. She also dealt with numerous other high-profile cases, and she is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from The People versus O.J. Simpson. She's now a writer and a consultant living in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So what brought you to Milwaukee?
The age-old answer is family. Our daughter had moved here. We visited. She had a baby. My husband had already retired, and he was visiting here so much that I finally said, look, I'll just quit my job and we'll move there. Well, and we did. And it was 11 years ago, and we have not regretted it at all.
Now, when did your book, Anatomy of a Trial, first come out?
The publication, the hard copy, was the end of 2008. Actually, it was available 2009.
And now it's out in ebook.
Just came out as an ebook, right?
Well, talk a little bit about how you you kept an audio journal of the day to day events that happened during the O.J. Simpson trial.
I did. I didn't start that right away. This was, I believe, a survival tactic that my husband suggested for himself, because I would come home in the evening or at night, actually, and just be so wound up about what had happened, what was going on, and all of the events and so forth. And finally I said, you have a commute. Why don't you just record what happened on your way home? So I started doing that. I also kept copious notes. I was a journalist before I became the court information officer, so it was just second nature for me to take notes about everything. So I had notebooks full of day-to-day events.
Well, that must have been quite the... you had a front-row seat, essentially, going on during that... a lot of people call it a spectacle. I mean, it really, we had not really seen anything quite like that before.
I think there was something fairly similar. It was the first trial that occurred, really high-profile trial that occurred after I joined the court. It was the Rodney King beating trial, and it certainly was very well covered by the media, just hordes of news media. Many, many, many different issues came up during that trial, but it paled compared to the Simpson trial.
Yeah, well, let me see if I can play the audio of that verdict. We had a little technical glitch earlier. Let's take a listen to what many of us listened to 18 years ago today.
Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the state of California versus Orenthal James Simpson, case number BA097211. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
And, boy, a lot of people's jaws dropped and a lot of people's cheers went out. So what was your reaction? Were you expecting that?
I was not, and I should have been. The jury was out such a short period of time. That is the only thing they could have come back with in hindsight. But sitting in the courtroom and hearing that, you've had this feeling of just your blood draining out and just feeling stunned. But that's how I reacted, as prepared as I thought I was.
Yeah, so why do you say in hindsight you should have realized that?
Just thinking, I got to the point during that trial that just getting one foot in front of the other was a major accomplishment every day. So it was, my focus was on the news media. Were they in place? Did they have things set up the way they wanted, they needed, the way the court would allow, and so forth? Had everybody been notified who should have been notified? So that's where my focus was. So when the verdict was read, it was sort of like a jerk back to reality of this is the trial. This is what this is about. My universe was dealing with the news media and taking care of matters with them.
So what was the immediate media reaction to that verdict?
I think everybody felt stunned. We had a huge media presence there. One news organization had 9 people on site. So, and there were dozens and dozens of news organizations. So to have a blanket reaction of everybody, it's almost impossible. There were individual reactions. We had a large number of people who were African Americans, and their reaction, I think, reflected what we saw in the general population. Not that every African American celebrated the verdict. Not that every white person felt outraged or disagreed with the verdict, but in broad strokes, I think that's a fairly accurate assessment. And the news media, many members of the news media, reacted the same way, except that they didn't really show it because they had a job to do. They had to report their stories. They had to get back to their editors. They had to get ready for any kind of interview they could do with jurors and things of that nature.
Yeah. So do you think that this trial changed the role of media, and especially the cameras in the courtroom?
Absolutely. This trial has been called many times the trial of the century. Well, lots of trials have been called the trial of the century. And quite often it's simply because of the media presence, the public interest, even public obsession with a case. I believe the Simpson trial went way beyond that. I think there were profound and long-term effects of that trial in many areas, the judiciary, the legal profession, the news media, the public perception, and jurors. The cameras, I believe, is the most significant and the most tangible effect or change that occurred immediately, and I think still reverberates. Certainly in my experience in recent times, cameras still come up as a huge issue of debate. And the Simpson trial is very, very often cited as a reason for continuing to bar cameras if, in fact, courts do not already allow cameras, and has been cited in restricting camera access more, certainly in California. The state of California rewrote its media access rules of court after this trial and made it the access more restrictive and at the absolute discretion of the judge presiding over a courtroom or over a trial.
Yeah, and why were the cameras in the courtroom in any way to blame for the trial or the outcome of the trial?
The simple answer is blame the messenger. That sounds so trite. It's a cliche. But I think cameras get an unfair blame because they are simply recording and showing what happened. I take a little bit of issue with that. I am an advocate of cameras in the courtroom. I do believe cameras should have been in the Simpson trial, You think there was an outcry over the verdict when people thought they saw everything there was to see about that trial. Imagine if they had not been able to actually see the trial itself. I think the way cameras are used can be improved. They are used now in a creative way, or I should say then. The courts that still allow cameras still do not do what I think should be done, and that is that the camera is just treated like a set of eyes, somebody sitting in the courtroom, where they cannot zoom in and create be edited in a creative way to create drama that really isn't there. But just a fixed medium-wide angle that gets the well of the courtroom, that is the part of the courtroom that is on the judge side of the rail that divides the courtroom from the spectators. California changed its rules so that cameras cannot even take pictures or get footage of spectators in the courtroom. And I think that's probably a good thing. So I think the way cameras are used can be improved. But when people see what they think they see and then are told what they to think what they are seeing, and then there are huge attendant things going on outside of the courtroom. Things get blurred, they get melded. People don't realize that what they saw on camera that occurred inside the courtroom did not include what was going on in the periphery on the outside edges. So it's been called a media circus. There was certainly a circus atmosphere. The vast majority of that was outside of the courthouse and to a smaller extent in the courthouse, but not inside the courtroom itself.
We are talking with Jerrianne Hazlett. She was the public information officer of Los Angeles County Superior Courts during the O.J. Simpson trial. And she is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from The People versus O.J. Simpson, which is now out on ebook. And we welcome your questions and your memories. What do you remember about the O.J. Simpson trial? What do you think were some of the effects of the trial on our court system, on our media, on our culture? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I feel sorry for the families because I don't think that they feel justice has been served, and I'm not sure I do either.
I think I'm satisfied. I'm very satisfied with the verdict. I think the prosecution had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and they didn't do that for me.
Reaction to the O.J. Simpson acquittal 18 years ago today. We are talking about the effects of this trial on American culture today, and we're welcoming your reactions and your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Jerrianne Hazlett. She is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from The People versus O.J. Simpson. So, Jerrianne, what is one of the biggest lessons learned from that trial as far as you're concerned?
Oh, Mimi. One of the biggest lessons, certainly, that I learned and I tried to impart to my fellow public information officers across the country and the people who read the book, people in the judiciary and so forth. I included a blueprint in there of how I think things should be prepared for in a trial of that nature. I was a veteran of high-profile trials by the time the Jackson trial came, the Simpson trial came along. Rodney King beating trial, I mentioned, Heidi Fleiss, Menendez brothers, and Michael Jackson. There was a case in court involving him in 1993. So I thought I was very well prepared. I thought the judge, I think, thought he was. He was an experienced jurist. He had handled high-profile cases himself. But even so, we did not, I don't think anything could really have prepared us for that, having prepared us for that trial. That's one of the biggest lessons, and that is that there is so much that needs to be considered and needs to be managed in a better way than I certainly did. That's one thing. Another lesson, I think, is the role of the media, and this is perhaps a negative lesson in a way. That trial, I think, was a watershed of criminal trials being becoming a form of mass entertainment, changing from its role of being delivering information to providing entertainment. And it was looked on as a way to boost ratings. Anytime anything about the Simpson trial was on Nightline, for instance, Ted Koppel said that the ratings of that show increased by at least 10%. And they tried to have broadcasts about the trial as little as possible because they did not want to be have the show be turned into and be completely consumed by the trial. There are other things that have come out of that trial and more subtle, but I think very important, and that is the perspective that people of different experiences and backgrounds and races have. Whites, for the most part, were outraged. African Americans, for the most part, felt justified after years of what they perceived as being black defendants being treated, not getting the justice, that not being treated equally by the court system. And there are cases that they point to. In 1991, a 15-year-old African-American girl was in a shop run by a Korean in South Central L.A., and she had a bottle of orange juice in her hand. The shopkeeper thought she was trying to shoplift. She pulled a gun on her and shot her in the back of the head and killed her. The shopkeeper ended up with probation. The maximum sentence that could have been imposed was 16 years, and she was fined and given probation and community service. The black community was just outraged over that. The black community was certainly outraged over the acquittal of the four white police officers in the Rodney King beating trial. So they felt like Simpson represented, he was exonerated for those who had not been in the past. And whites didn't, had never looked at they. It was not on their radar because the plight or the treatment or what was seen as the disparity of black defendants in the justice system did not affect them. Therefore, they had never thought about it. And I think it forced at least those who were willing to think about it to consider these different perspectives and that they were valid.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the effect of the O.J. Simpson trial and verdict. Today is the 18th anniversary of the verdict, and the effect that that has had on the judiciary, the media, and American culture in general. We are talking with Jerrianne Hazlett. She is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from the People versus O.J. Simpson, now out on ebook. Jerrianne was the public information officer, media liaison with the Los Angeles County Superior Courts during the trial. She now lives in Milwaukee and is giving us her reflections, and we welcome yours too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. By the way, coming up after 7 o'clock, we will get two takes on the continued government shutdown showdown. On this 18th anniversary of the O.J. Simpson murder verdict, we are talking with the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from the People versus O.J. Simpson. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, October the 3rd. Do you remember the O.J. Simpson trial? Do you remember your reaction to the verdict? Do you think that there are long-lasting effects of this trial on our court system, our media, and our culture? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jerrianne Hazlett is our guest. She was, at the time, the public information officer of Los Angeles County Superior Courts. Now she lives in Milwaukee. She, again, is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, which just came out as an ebook. And, Jerrianne, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Lance Ito, the judge who presided over the O.J. Simpson trial. There was a widespread perception that he had lost control of the trial, but you think that's an unfair assessment. Why?
Well, I don't think it's. I think it's based on incomplete information. To tell you the truth, I had a unique perspective that I think gave me an advantage over everyone who's really written about this trial so far. And that is that I was in the courtroom every day. I met with the judge every day, sometimes multiple times. I interacted with media throughout the trial. I had previous high-profile trials under my belt. Judge Ito himself was an experienced jurist. He had presided over high-profile cases in the past. And as I had said, I don't think anything could really have prepared us for the events that occurred. But those who think that Judge Ito lost control or was inept, incompetent, or whatever, only know what they think they know through television coverage. And I'd like to illustrate that with something that occurred a few years after the trial.
Okay.
I was at a conference of court information officers in Phoenix. There was a presentation by the former Arizona Chief Justice, and in his remarks, he told about a major television network wanting to film jurors on a trial from beginning to end, from jury selection all the way through the verdict, including being in the deliberation room with them. And this justice said that if he were going to grant that request, he would make sure that it was a case that didn't have a Lance Ito presiding over it. I was a little dismayed that a judge would say such a thing in public. It sort of goes against their canons of ethics on the one hand, but that's all right. I asked him afterwards why he had said that, and he said, well, everyone knows that Judge Ito lost control of the courtroom. And I said, well, how do they know that? And he said, well, it's just common knowledge. They saw it on TV. And I asked him what he would have done differently. And he said, I would have hauled those lawyers holding audience with the media on the courthouse steps into my chamber so fast their heads would have been spinning. And I said, well, Judge Ito did that. And he said, oh. And I said, he admonished them, he fined them. In fact, that trial, the lawyers in that trial were more heavily fined than any criminal trial in the state's history to that point. He issued court orders. In fact, one I think they should have been embarrassed because it addressed them as children, which is what they were acting like. And he said, well, I didn't know that. And I said, but that's my point, that this justice's only source of information was the television. And there was so much that people didn't know about what happened or the context of what did happen, that they had only this narrow focus of the camera lens into the trial itself. But there was so much going on outside of the courtroom that as a television viewer, the lines get blurred and it kind of merges or melds into the trial. And so you think the whole thing is a circus. And people don't understand that a verdict, for instance, or that a jury quite often does not hear or see everything that a television viewer does. They're out. They're out of the courtroom when some things are discussed as to whether or not it's admissible evidence, and other emotions are debated and so forth. But not only do people watching television see all of that that the jury doesn't see, but there are so many legal pundits telling them what they should be thinking about what they're seeing, what that should tell them about the trial and how that should affect the jury and the jury's deliberations, when in fact, quite often, the jury has no access to what the pundit thinks they should be taking into consideration.
Right, but still, so, Judge Ito really suffered because of that trial, didn't he? He was, as you say, well-respected. A lot of people thought he was a rising star, and that did that stop him in his tracks?
It did. It certainly did. And I think in a way it's part of a phenomenon that really has become an art form these days of PAC journalism, where people take a word of somebody else, or it's a bandwagon that they all jump on. I will tell you, Judge Ito certainly made mistakes, and he admits it, and I think one of the biggest mistakes he made was before the trial actually began, and that was he did an interview on a local television station. It had nothing to do with the trial. It wasn't supposed to have anything to do with the trial. It was about the Japanese internment camps. There was an exhibit coming to Los Angeles, and a news reporter who was a friend of his talked him into doing an interview about it. He told me in advance, he said, you know, give me a graceful way out of doing an interview. And I was shocked. What are you talking about? We agreed early on you were not going to be doing any media interviews. Well, this is different, he said. And I gave him a whole list of reasons of why he should not do this interview, regardless of the fact that it was not about the trial or the case or Simpson or anything related to it. He did the interview, and it completely outraged all of the news media who wanted to have interviews with him. They thought that he was giving preferential treatment, special access to one news reporter, to one news station, when they all had been asking for interviews. And I really think that turned the tide against him, even though he had done a number of things to try to accommodate them in ways that I'd never seen a judge do before. And so I think it began sort of a downward spiral of everything he did or said, everything that occurred in the trial was under a microscope, and it was analyzed and reanalyzed and rehashed. The local TV there had a half-an-hour recap of the trial every night, and they had to fill that time with people talking about the trial and what happened and so forth. One
I wanted to also ask about the prosecutors. There was also, I guess, a perception that they just blew it. What do you think the perception was?
Well, and that's for legal minds to debate. I can certainly tell you my opinion of that, but it not being a lawyer, I don't have the legal background to really analyze the legal aspects of that. From my point of view, I do think the prosecution was wanting. They had a jury consultant they hired to help them with jury selection. They did not use his expertise at all. The defense attorney attorneys had one also. She sat at the counsel table with them, went over everything, did mock trials after hours and so forth. The prosecution, I felt at times, was, I don't know if the word not prepared, I don't think it's that's... they just bumbled things. The most notorious thing was Christopher Darden having Simpson try on the, quote, bloody glove. Mm-hmm. Never mind that he was no longer taking his arthritis medicine, so his knuckles and so forth would be swollen. He was given a latex glove to try the pull the glove on over. The glove had been wet at one time and dried out. Everybody knows what happens to leather when that happens, except maybe Christopher Darden. And, of course, he couldn't pull it on, and he made an exaggerated attempt that he was unable to do it. So there are various things. I think Marcia Clark really miscalculated the jury, the African American women who were on that jury. She pleaded child care problems, and that's why the court finally agreed to let the court proceedings begin a half hour later every morning. And the African American jurists, these people, they were all sequestered, and they didn't want time wasted. They wanted to get on with it, and they didn't have much sympathy for that. But you know, I wanted to say about Judge Ida, the longer anyone is under scrutiny, the greater the opportunity for criticism. And so it just became sort of a bandwagon that people got on, and having their a dim view after this interview, it did kind of spiral downward.
We are talking about the anniversary of the O.J. Simpson verdict. It was read 18 years ago today, and we are talking with a guest who now lives in Milwaukee, but at the time she was the public information officer of the L.A. County Superior Courts, and she is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from the People versus O.J. Simpson. And we wonder what lessons you think we have learned about our judiciary system, about the media's role in covering cases like this, about our culture in general. Do you think that things have changed much? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, October 3rd. Today is the 18th anniversary of the O.J. Simpson murder verdict. A lot of people remember that day that he was acquitted. And we are talking about the effects of this trial on the judiciary system, on the media, on American culture. And we're welcoming your input and your memories, your reactions, whether you think things have changed much since the O.J. Simpson trial. We have an open line, and I'm wondering what that means. I know that back during this trial, we didn't cover it on a day-to-day basis by any means on Wisconsin Public Radio. A lot of people thought that we didn't need to be covering a sensational trial of some, you know, some celebrity. But even when we talked sometimes about the profound race relations issues that were raised by the verdict and the reaction to the verdict, some people thought we don't need to talk about O.J. Simpson. Well, we're trying to talk about the issues beyond his celebrity or the notoriety. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jerry Ann Hazlett is our guest. She is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from the People versus O.J. Simpson. Jerry Ann was working in Los Angeles at the time of the trial. She was the public information officer. She had a lot to do with this trial and many, many other high-profile trial, including Rodney King, the Menendez brothers, Heidi Fleiss, and many others. And she now is a writer and a consultant living in Milwaukee. And her book just came out on ebook. Why don't you tell us, Jerry Ann, why did you write the book? What did you want people to take away from the book?
Well, you know, at first, let me say that I didn't intend to write a book. Certainly, right after the trial, as the trial was winding down and toward the end, I was thinking, my gosh, nobody has experienced what I've experienced. I had a front row seat, as you say, and so forth. But then everybody else was doing books, and I said, no, I don't need to. Everybody else has already done it. Well, as time went on, and particularly as I began to get more into the consulting business, and much of my consulting was in other countries, not just in this country. The misperceptions and misinformation, the way it persisted and really even grew, was just frustrating. And I began to sort of have this itch of there should be some way I can kind of set the record straight. Just a few years ago, I was having dinner with a journalist. We were at the National Judicial College, where she and I both were on faculty at the National Center for Courts and Media. And she was talking about the trial and relating something that she understood had happened. And I said, no, that was wrong. And I told her what really had happened. And she says, oh, I didn't know that. She said, you should write a book. She said, at least, you know, at least journalists should know how things went. And that it just took me back to my roots as a journalist and why I became a journalist. And that is because I just have a strong belief in the people's right to know. And it also kind of jarred me back to when I first started working for the court, my interview with a panel of judges and the court executive officer. I tried to emphasize that if they hired me, that my mission would be to try to demystify the courts and the media to each other. There was just a huge gulf between the two, and they kind of remind me of the political parties these days, that they wouldn't even talk in many cases. And so I thought if I could help bridge that gulf, that I would have accomplished something important. And I really felt like this trial had driven a wedge, had been a big setback in that. So it was maybe an opportunity to try to start building that bridge again.
Well, we talked earlier about how there was some hesitancy and about cameras in the courtroom and the effect that this trial had on cameras in the courtroom. But, you know, I'm still seeing some wall-to-wall coverage of some, you know, notorious cases or important cases. Like, for instance, there was cameras in the courtroom for the George Zimmerman trial. That was that a flashback for you in any way?
Certainly, I've followed it fairly closely, primarily for the camera aspect and the way things were reported and the way things. The trials have become football games where who scored the most points today, and I think that gives the public sort of a false sense of what is happening. You mentioned Zimmerman. There were other cases that were televised. What was the name of? I thought. I'm sorry, I've forgotten her name, but she was accused of
the one of some murder. Yeah, I don't
killing her little girl. I can't remember her name. That little girl's name was similar to hers. Anthony, Casey Anthony.
Yes.
And the Terry Schiavo case. Those all occurred in Florida. Florida is unique among states in this country. In Florida, cameras are presumed right. They're not a privilege, as they are in other states. Every case starts out with the presumption that cameras will be allowed in. And in fact, I believe that courtrooms there are equipped with cameras so that media can have access to footage. They're unique. They also allow the photography of jurors on a case, which shocked me during the William Kennedy Smith rape trial way back in, 91, I think it was. I was like, my gosh, what are they doing showing the jurors in the courtroom? It's allowed in Florida. So unless someone makes a strong case to not allow cameras, the judge will allow cameras. Yeah. So, and certainly cameras are in other courts these days. I think this shying away from cameras, clamping down, not allowing cameras, that was such a strong reaction to the Simpson trial, is easing off. We see states that never allowed cameras in the past. Now, if not allowing just blanket all courts have the option, or judges have the option of granting camera coverage if requests have been made, at least in selective courts. Illinois is allowing cameras in some of its trial courts. All states, every state in the union, technically allows cameras in the courtroom, but it depends on where that access is being granted. Some it's just the Supreme Court. Others it's the lower appellate courts, but not the trial courts. And of course, the trial courts is where the action is that the media really want to film.
Well, our time is gone. I want to thank you, Gerianne, very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Gerianne Hazlett is the author of Anatomy of a Trial, Public Loss, Lessons Learned from the People versus O.J. Simpson, which is now out as an ebook. Today is the 18th anniversary of the O.J. Simpson murder verdict. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.